Today we're talking about three real life stories that may sound fake, but are 100% true. And these stories have some of the darkest backstories.
Make sure you guys stay till the third story because each story gets progressively darker and darker.
So if you're new to the channel, please hit the subscribe button and hit the like button. If you hit the like button, you will have good luck for the rest of your life, including Whoa. That includes
tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
And today.
Well, the rest of your life. Right?
It's only up from here.
It's only up.
Also, comment any other stories or theories or fun facts you want us to share on next week's show. So let's get into the stories.
Dun, dun, dun.
So the story starts out October 2002, where we see a young couple named Mark and Kathy is pregnant with their first child. So both Mark and Kathy are driving from Ohio to a baby shower that Kathy's family's planning to celebrate her. So it's a fairly long drive from Ohio for Kathy and Mark. It's an 8-hour drive. Kathy and Mark decided that we better leave early to be able to beat the traffic. But unfortunately, Kathy wasn't feeling well. Mark was kind of busy, so they ended up leaving way later than they expected. So after driving for about 7 hours, Mark and Kathy are both super tired. They need to use the restroom super bad. So they pull into a rest stop in Maryland to be able to use the restroom. So when they pulled into the parking lot for the rest stop, it was completely empty. But there was one other car in the rest stop parking lot.
Okay, that's where it always starts. There's always that one other car in the lot with them.
So Mark wanted to try to get Kathy as close as he can to the bathroom, but he didn't want to park super close to the dark blue sedan, so he parked three spots over. So once he parked, they both got out of the car. They ran to the restroom. Kathy went to the women's restroom and Mark went to the men's restroom. And Mark finished the restroom first, so he came outside. And when he walked outside, the dark blue sedan was still parked right outside the bathroom. And he realized in the dark blue sedan that there was a middle-aged man in the driver's seat and there was a teenage boy in the passenger seat sleeping. But the middle-aged man sitting in the driver's seat kept looking at Mark intensely, just staring at him directly in his eyes. And Mark starts to feel super uncomfortable because he's like, why is this guy staring at me? And he's like hoping that Kathy finishes up in the restroom as fast as she can. Apparently, the middle-aged man in the driver's seat is looking at Mark as if he wants to kill Mark.
Yeah, this is where I would start to run.
Yeah, so Mark's trying to play it cool, right? So he sees the guy looking at him, so Mark just looks the other way, and he's just like wiggling his fingers like, come on, Kathy, like, I hope you finish soon. So Kathy finishes up in the restroom, walks outside, and Mark starts motioning to her like, let's go, like, it's time to go, we gotta move fast. And Kathy's like, what's the problem? Like, why are you acting like that? And Mark just tells Kathy like, look, get in the car now, we have to leave. So they both run into the car. Mark starts the car, starts backing up the car, but as he's backing up the car, he notices that the dark blue sedan has something weird in the back of the car. He notices that there's a huge hole above the license plate of the dark blue sedan, and he finds it really strange, so he just drives off as fast as he can. But as they're leaving, the man in the front seat, in the driver's seat that was looking at Mark, continues to look at Mark, and is just intensely looking at him. So Mark and Kathy, they leave, they get to the baby shower, and everything was fine.
So they never found out why the guy was looking at him like that.
Okay, so a week goes by, and Mark is watching the news with Kathy, and all of a sudden, breaking news comes on the screen, and this reporter is at the same parking lot that Mark and Kathy use the restroom at, and you see the dark blue sedan on the screen. And the reporter says to the camera, DC snipers have just been caught. And it turns out that the man in the driver's seat was John Allen Muhammad, and the teenage boy in the passenger seat was named Lee Boy Malvo. And it turns out that both of them are responsible for killing 10 people.
Dude, they were definitely going to kill Mark if he didn't leave.
So when you look back at the dark blue sedan, the reason why there was a hole above the license plate is because that's what they would use to shoot their sniper rifle through to hide where the bullets were coming from and to conceal the flashes. And it turns out the night that Mark and Kathy went to the rest stop that night, Muhammad and Malvo were actually halfway through the killing spree, and at that point they only killed 5 people. And Mark thinks that the reason why they didn't kill Mark and Kathy was because that they would use the rest stop as a place to be able to relax and hide away after they would do the killing. So it was like their safe zone. So they didn't want any crime or anything to happen in their safe zone because they wanted to protect that one spot. So it turns out that Muhammad was given the death sentence and Malvo was given life in prison.
Dude, Mark and Kathy are lucky they didn't get killed. I mean, if they're right in the middle of their killing spree and they didn't get killed, that's pretty lucky.
Okay, so moving on to the next story. This story starts off in 1980 with a guy named Bobby Shafron, and he's going to a small community college called Sullivan County Community College. And it's a small community college near New York, and it's Bobby's first day. And since it's his first day, he has no friends there. He knows no one that goes to that school, and none of his previous friends are attending the school with him. And for Bobby, he deals with a lot of social anxiety. So for him, he was super nervous to have to meet new people, to talk to new people. So Bobby arrives at the school, he pulls into the parking lot, and he sees all these people outside. So he steps out of his car, starts walking. Hundreds of kids are around him, and everyone starts looking at him as if they know who he is. So Bobby starts getting super uncomfortable, so he starts walking really fast, and all of a sudden this kid goes, hey, so good to see you again, how was your summer? And then another person says, we missed you over the summer, we're so happy to see you. And Bobby's like so confused, like, what are these people saying?
So he's never been to this school before and people are acting like they know him.
Yeah, so Bobby knows no one at the school, it's his first day, he's never met any of these people. All of a sudden this young girl runs up to Bobby, kisses him on the cheek, and says like, it's so good to see you, I missed you so much. And Bobby tells her, I think you've mistaken me for someone else. And then she's like, oh, you're so funny. And then she runs off. So at this point, Bobby just wants to get to his dorm. So he puts his head down, starts booking it towards his dorm. And all of a sudden, this guy yells at him from across the hall, Eddie, stop. Where are you going? But Bobby just pretended like he didn't hear it, kept walking. And the guy kept saying, Eddie, stop running. So Bobby then turns around and sees the guy yelling right at Bobby.
I would have just walked away, to be honest.
So Bobby walks up to the guy and says, look, I think everyone's mistaking me for a guy named Eddie, but I'm not Eddie. Like, I want to make that very clear. And the guy's like, oh my gosh, you're so funny, Eddie. Like, back with the jokes. And then the guy just runs off. So Bobby's just like, what is happening? Like, why is this happening to me? So he goes straight into his dorm. He walks in. He puts his stuff down. And he just lays on his bed. He's like, I can't believe what is going on. Like, am I in a movie right now? Like, this is crazy. And all of a sudden, he hears a knock at the door. And Bobby's like, oh, here we go again. Someone's going to call me Eddie. So he opens the door, and at his doorstep was another student. And all of a sudden, the student looks right at Bobby, and his face just gets really confused. Like, what? He stares at Bobby as if he's like an unknown species, or like an alien, or like a lost treasure that was finally found. Bobby asks the kid, like, can I help you with something? Are you okay? And then the kid asks Bobby, is your birthday July 12th? And all of a sudden, Bobby's like weirded out by, like, what? Yeah, my birthday's July 12th. And the guy is just in shock. And he tells Bobby, like, look, my name is Michael, and I'm really good friends with a guy named Eddie Gallant. And he tells Bobby, you guys have to be twins. You guys look identical, and you have the same birthdays.
Dude, that's so random.
Yeah, so Bobby was super shocked because growing up, he was never told that he had siblings. All he knew was that he was adopted. So he asked Michael, like, can you take me to Eddie? I would love to meet him. So Michael tells Bobby, like, look, why don't we just try to call Eddie and see if he's willing to meet you and, like, try to get some answers. So Michael and Bobby head to a payphone. They pick up the phone, and Bobby just says to Eddie, hi, my name is Bobby. I just went to the school. Everyone thinks that I'm you, and I don't know what to do. And then Eddie just says, everyone's been calling me too about you being a student that looks just like me. So Bobby asks Eddie, like, look, is there any way we can meet? Is there any way we could see each other in person? So Eddie tells Bobby, of course. So he tells Bobby and Michael to come down to his house. So Bobby and Michael hop in a car. They drive 2 hours straight to Eddie's house to be able to meet him. And when they arrive on his street, it was completely dark. There's only one house that was lit, and ended up being Eddie's house. So Michael and Bobby get out of the car. They walk up to Eddie's door. They start knocking on the door, and all of a sudden the door opens, and this man approaches. And as Bobby looks up, he sees the man's face, and he notices it looks just like him, and ended up being Eddie, and how they both look identical to each other. Bobby thinks he's looking into a mirror. He can't believe this. And then Eddie's face just goes into shock because he can't believe that he sees someone that looks just like him either. And all of them just start laughing because they don't know what to say. It's like crazy. Who would have thought?
It's weird they look so similar to each other that other people think they're the same person.
Yeah, so they all sit on the couch. Bobby and Eddie both start talking to each other, and the chemistry and the connection they have is unlike any other friendship they've had in their life. It feels like family. And they both talk to each other like, when's your birthday? And they both say July 12th. Were you adopted? Yes. And they both realize that they have to be brothers. So days go by, and all of a sudden news stations, local magazines find out about Bobby and Eddie, and they want to write stories about how two brothers were separated at birth and they come together again back in college. And a news channel sent a reporter out to go make sure that Bobby and Eddie were telling the truth. So they go, they look at Bobby and Eddie, and they interview them, and they realize that, oh my gosh, these guys are actually brothers separated at birth. So a news company, Newsday, released an article about Bobby and Eddie, explaining the whole backstory, how Bobby went to school one day knowing no one and everyone coming up to him saying that you're Eddie, and that led to finding Eddie, and the whole story got told to the whole country. But there's one question that's not being answered. How were they separated, and how did they not know that they had a sibling?
Yeah, it is kind of weird that no one's asking that question.
Yeah, so the news reports went super viral. Everyone knew about Eddie and Bobby's story, and they were just super invested, and they all wanted to talk to Eddie and Bobby. So weeks go by, and all of a sudden this group of kids get the newspaper, and they're reading about Eddie and Bobby, and they look at the photos, and they realize that, wow, that looks like our friend named David Kelman. They look just like him. So the group of friends take the newspaper to their friend named David, like, look at this. These guys look just like you. So David doesn't believe his friends at first until he reads the article, and he starts reading the article, and he realizes that Eddie and Bobby have birthdays on July 12th, and David's birthday is also on July 12th. And David was also adopted, and he was born in the same hospital as they were.
So there might be another one.
Yeah, so David is convinced that, yeah, I am their brother. So he pulls open a phone book, and he looks for Eddie's name, and he finds Eddie's home phone number. And David calls Eddie's home, and all of a sudden, Eddie's mom answers, and David says, hi, my name is David Kelman. I was adopted. My birthday's July 12th, and I really think that I'm related to your son. I think we're brothers. Eddie's mom is just in disbelief and tells David, okay, come to our house. Like, let's talk. So David arrives at Eddie's house, and all of a sudden Eddie and Bobby look through the window, and they see David, and in that moment they knew right away, that is our brother. He looks just like us. So David comes into the house. They all sit on the couch again, and they're just sitting there in shock looking at each other, and they just can't believe it, how we went our whole life not knowing we're brothers. And Eddie's mom said it was super magical when all three brothers were in the room for the first time. The chemistry they had, it was as if they were brothers and they knew each other their whole life.
How do triplets get separated at birth?
Yeah, so that's the huge question. So more news companies find out that David is now the long-lost triplet. So Newsday writes another article about David Kelman, how he's the long-lost third brother. Instantly, David, Eddie, and Bobby become overnight superstars. Everyone's talking about them. The world loves them. They want to know more. They want to see every step they take. They want to be a part of their lives. They want to know what happens now. The three brothers talk to every single magazine outlet, every single news station, every single talk show. And there's one question that was always being asked of them. Is there things that you guys do that are super similar, that are unique to you guys? So they revealed how all three brothers' favorite sport is wrestling, and they competed in junior high and high school. All three brothers smoke the same type of cigarettes. They have the same taste in women, and they all enjoy the same type of food. And whenever they would go on talk shows, it was so obvious that they were brothers because they would finish each other's sentences, they would talk over each other, and their mannerisms were like identical.
It's crazy to think they grew up in separate homes, but yet they still have the same mannerisms and they like the same stuff. It's weird.
Yeah, so this is where things get really weird though. So for Eddie, David, and Bobby, they live this crazy life, right? Everyone loves them. They're worldwide stars. They were loving the attention. Everything was going great for them. They were just so distracted by all the fame and all the exposure. It was just mind-blowing for them. But for David, Eddie, and Bobby's parents, they were like, this is all great, but we need to get the questions. Like, how did this happen? How do we not know that there were siblings? How do we not know they were separated? Like, what is going on here? Someone needs to answer these questions for us.
How did the parents not know? I thought when you like adopt a kid, they go through like this whole screening process where you get to know like the kid's background and everything.
Exactly. You think these parents would have been told these things before they adopted these kids. So they decided to reach out to the agency that they use for adoption. And it was this place called Louise Wise Agency. And basically it was one of the best adoption agencies in the whole world. And they demanded to the agency, like, look, we need answers now. Like, why were we not told these things before we adopted these kids? And the agency just told the parents, look, it's harder to find a family willing to take three kids instead of one. So that's why we didn't tell anyone. And they didn't want to tell the parents that you're adopting a kid from a set of triplets so that the parents would feel bad for separating them. And David's dad got super mad when he heard this because he told them, if you were to tell me that my son had two other brothers, I would have adopted all three of them. The agency just told them, look, I'm sorry that you're having to go through this. We didn't want this to happen, but there's nothing we can do about it now. So all three of the parents left the building feeling like, man, the agency is hiding something, that they're not telling us the full truth. And they feel like a lot of the story is being hidden from them.
Yeah, it just seems like there has to be like more to it.
Yeah, so as the parents leave the building, all of a sudden Bobby's dad realizes that he forgot his umbrella in the meeting room. So Bobby's dad walks back into the building. He wants to be quiet because he doesn't want to disturb anyone. And he reaches inside the room to grab his umbrella, and he notices that everyone in the meeting, all the executives that they were meeting with, all were popping champagne and said, like, job well done, guys, job well done. So Bobby's dad is super uncomfortable by this because he's realizing that all the people that they met with were celebrating that they were able to lie to the parents, basically celebrating that they were able to successfully hide the truth behind why they separated these kids.
Dude, that is crazy that they're celebrating about lying.
Yeah, so the parents realize that they have to get some lawyers in order to get the answers they need because these agencies are totally lying to them. And every big lawyer in New York City was so excited to help the parents because they knew that it would be such a public case. There would be so much attention around it. It would be great for their law firm to get the attention. But what's crazy is once the lawyers agreed to help the parents, all of a sudden the lawyers would then contact the parents and say, hey, I'm sorry, guys. We actually can't help you. There's a conflict with the case and we can't be involved. So the parents started to have to find new lawyers, but every lawyer they found, no lawyer would want to work with them. And what the parents realized is that the adoption agency was threatening these lawyers or making some kind of deals on the back end to make sure that they wouldn't help the parents.
I don't understand how the agency has that much power.
Yeah, so obviously the agency was hiding something huge for them to go through all this trouble. So years go by and the parents realize that they'll never receive the answers that they need, and they just accept the fact that they won't. But for David, Bobby, and Eddie, they didn't care that they didn't get the answers they wanted. They were just so happy to have brothers. They were so happy to be able to be so close and do things together. And all three of them started families of their own, and they just ultimately just created one big family, and they would just all go do things together and be with each other. And then David, Eddie, and Bobby ended up making a restaurant together in New York called Triplets, and the restaurant was super successful. In the first year, they made over $1 million, and it was just a huge restaurant in New York.
That's a pretty successful restaurant.
Yeah, it was super successful. And during the second year, that's when they started having some arguments, and things started to go really wrong. They basically started arguing about how to run the business, about money, about everything, and it created a lot of conflict. And this is truly the first time they've ever had conflict with each other because they never grew up together, so they never knew what it was like to have arguments and how to work through that. And the arguing got so bad that Bobby ended up stepping away from the restaurant and wanting nothing to do with it anymore. So this argument caused the brothers to not be close anymore. And Eddie felt really bad because he missed being brothers. He missed being able to hang out. He missed running the restaurant together. He just wanted his brothers to be close to him. And this caused Eddie to go in depression, and his depression got so bad, he ended up taking his own life.
Wait, what?
So Bobby and David felt devastated, felt so bad that this argument is what led to his death. And all the news articles, all the news stations were talking about Eddie's death. And this one journalist named Lawrence Wright wrote an article how he found this one science article called Psychoanalytics of a Child. So this article was about a science study done in New York about a set of triplets that were separated at birth given to different families to analyze their behavior. So Lawrence picks up the phone and calls Bobby and tells him that, hey, this study is the study that you guys were a part of. So Bobby and David were so upset. They felt like they were lab rats being used for just entertainment. And they thought maybe this could have affected their mental health growing up. And this could be one of the reasons why Eddie ended up taking his own life from the mental trauma.
Dude, what kind of study is that? That's crazy.
Yeah. And after Lawrence Wright wrote this article about this study, more twins came forward and said, hey, I think I was a part of this too. And they found that many twins were a part of this program and that many of these twins were suffering with depression because of this experience.
Okay, if you were adopted, you might want to check if you have a twin out there.
Yeah, so David and Bobby wanted to try to find some answers, like why was this study even being done? Why were they a part of it? So they reached back out to the adoption agency, and the adoption agency finally confirmed that yes, you guys were a part of the experiment, and that's all we know. So David and Bobby were able to find out who was the lead scientist on this experiment, and his name was Peter Neubauer. So then Lawrence Wright, the journalist, reached out to Peter Neubauer to ask him, why did you conduct this study? What was the motive? And Peter Neubauer said, I am never going to talk about the study. I'm never going to give you any information about it. I don't want to talk about it. Peter Neubauer never revealed what he found in this study. Even in 2008, right before he died, he went to university to hide all his evidence of this study to not be released to the public until 2026 because he didn't want anyone to know why he did it or what he found.
Why 2026?
So many people believe that the reason why he picked 2026 is because he was hoping that by 2026, all the people involved in the study, like all the twins, all the scientists, that they would be dead by 2026. So he's hoping that no one would find out. Come to find out that the reason behind this experiment was to find out if nature or nurture determines a person's success or failure. Basically saying, is it your environment that you're in that dictates who you become, or is it your genetic makeup that makes you become who you are?
So basically your DNA is going to predict how successful you'll be.
Well, that's what they're trying to say the study found. And they said that they put Bobby in a wealthy family, they put Eddie in a middle class family, and they put David in a lower income family where his parents were immigrants and English was their second language. And what they're trying to say is that the study showed that no matter what environment these boys were in, they still ended up finding each other and that they were at the same level at the end. But this is where it gets really weird. Another doctor involved in the study who said that they put Eddie in a family that was really strict and kind of abusive to Eddie. And he thinks that's why Eddie went into depression and he ended up killing himself.
So basically it was a failed experiment because your environment and who raised you does affect who you'll become.
Yeah, so the families were really upset that their kids were involved in this experiment. David and Bobby were able to get access to the study later on in life. And when they got the study, they realized that all the papers were all scratched up. The words didn't make sense and it was just useless to them. David and Bobby never got the answers they wanted. They never received the actual results from the experiment, and the doctors and the adoption agency that was involved with this, no one was punished. It was all swept under the rug and nothing happened to them. David and Bobby are still alive today. They have their families and they're just living their life.
Dude, that's a crazy story.
It's crazy how they never got the answers to any of this.
Okay, on to the third and final story. This is why you should never live in a cabin, but the reason why is one of the craziest unsolved mysteries ever.
Oh boy.
So there was this family of six. There was a mother and five children. There was three boys and two girls. And as a family, they decided to move towards Northern California to like start fresh and start a new life. And they were just like a regular old family. Like they were just normal people. And the area they decided to live in was like a village of small cabins instead of going to a town with like large homes. And shortly after moving there, all the kids in the family started to make friends with like the neighbor's kids, and they started getting friends within the neighborhood. And every now and then, some of the kids would sleep over at each other's cabins. So one night, the oldest daughter named Sheila stayed at her friend's cabin next door, and they just had a normal night. Like they just had a sleepover, they had fun. But then the next morning came and Sheila went home. And right when she opened the door, she saw her brother, her mom, and her brother's friend dead on the ground.
What?
Yeah, but there's crazy backstory behind this. So Sheila decides to go get help, but she also finds her two little brothers and their friend in the next room over, and they're alive. But Sheila realizes that there's one thing missing, and that's her little sister, Tina, and she was nowhere to be found. So then the police arrived to investigate the scene, and they found three weapons. They found a bent steak knife, they found a butcher knife, and a hammer. So the murderer used these weapons to kill them, then just left them there. But what's really weird is nobody heard the murders. Even Sheila's two little brothers that were sleeping in the next room over didn't hear anything. So now this really confused the police. They don't know who did this or why they did it. And all of this happened on the day of April 12th. And exactly 3 years later, on April 12th, the police got a phone call. And the phone call was anonymous, but all the phone caller said was, they found Tina's skull.
Do they find who this caller was?
No, but after this, the police rushed to where they said the body was, and they found the body. But what's weird is, how do you know if it's Tina if it's just a skull and bones? So now that it's 3 years later and they have new leads, they're trying to find who the suspect is. And one of the main suspects was a man named Marty Smart, who was actually the father of the kid that was found alive with the two brothers in the room over. And Marty and his wife were actually having marriage issues, and Sheila's mom would actually help Marty's wife in trying to help the marriage, and Marty didn't like this. And they think that Marty was actually the killer because his roommate was actually an ex-convict, and they think they both did it together.
It does seem like there's multiple people involved in the killing.
But what's even crazier, after this, police investigations just stopped out of nowhere. And a lot of people thought that the police weren't questioning the suspects properly and that the police just messed up the case entirely. So they were just trying to cover it up. So now it just seems like a dead end. But years later, the case was opened up again and someone was going through the evidence and they found a note from Marty to his wife. And in this letter, he admits to killing 4 people. And just to go back, there was 3 people killed in the cabin and then Tina was found after. So that's a total of 4 people. So that means if this letter is credible, that they found the killer. And Marty's wife even said that it matches his handwriting. So still to this day, we don't really know what's going to happen.
So the killer is probably Marty.
Yeah, because he was upset that Sheila was helping his wife with their marriage.
Oh my God, that is crazy.
Yeah.
That's so sad that these kids lost their lives over this.
Right.
All right, guys, thank you so much for watching this video. I know it's not like the usual podcast, but this week we're trying to prepare for episode 100 and we want to make episode 100 as special as it can be. So next week will be our episode 100 of Justin Nobody's podcast. So stay tuned, comment what you guys want us to talk about on that podcast, comment what you want to hear, what you want to see, anything like that, let us know. Also comment what your favorite story, which one did you think was the craziest? Also hit the like button, because when you hit the like button, not only if this video gets 3,000 likes, we'll be giving away a hot toy, but it'll give you good luck. So like it. Thank you guys so much for your support. We love you guys so much. We'll see you guys tomorrow on TikTok, and we'll see you guys next Sunday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube.
See you on the TikTok.
God bless you guys. See ya.
Love ya.